Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. It's that Wednesday, and it's always that time. 5 o'clock straight up on the West Coast, 8 o'clock in the East. The True North Podcast, hosted by my brother out there in Seattle, Washington, Billy North. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, producing in Los Angeles, chiming in here and there, 347-205-9631. If you happen to miss it, because we realize 30 minutes goes by quick, catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts. So without further ado, let me lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic. The threes, Bill. How are you? How can people get a hold of you? And you got some great guests coming in this week.
Yep. I have, I'm doing good, except for it's 23 degrees here and I couldn't get my gas cap open. and
wow.
I had to find out how, but I did. And you can reach me at BillNorte15@gmail.com, BillNorte15@gmail.com. And I'm sitting here with my guest, who is somebody really close to me. His name is Deshaun Golson, played in the NFL for 10-plus years and went to 2 Super Bowls, and we know each other well. How you doing, Deshaun?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
I'm wonderful. I'm just so glad to hear you. I'll see you tomorrow.
I'm excited. Excited to be on here, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
We doing all right. I decided to give Mark a little diversity. He's been hearing baseball for the last 5 podcasts, and I thought I'd mix you in there amongst others. And other than that, are you ready for Christmas?
Ready as I'm going to be. And I'm out right now, man, looking for some stuff for my girls. You know, they're getting grown now, so they got a lot of input in the Christmas wants. And
Hey, Deshaun.
Man, good,
Mark Mancini here.
This is Mark.
You know, what a stellar career, man. The 49ers, the Bucks, the Redskins, the Falcons. The first thing I want to say is I kind of grew up as a Steeler guy, and it's a sad day in Pittsburgh being raised, out in Los Angeles and born in the Berg. Franco Harris passed away 2 days before the celebration that they were going to have in Pittsburgh for the 50 years to the day, the Immaculate Reception. You might be a little younger on this, but the impact that you heard playing the game and everything, or going to Pittsburgh, about Franco Harris.
Yeah, to be honest, I heard a little bit of him speaking today on some moments he had. Didn't realize the passing, you know. And he was one of the greats and one of the legends, you know, that that paved the way for a lot of us that played in the league. It's unfortunate that what happened, but I really don't know too much on that, man. But I could just harp a little bit on Pittsburgh. I mean, I was fortunate to play a couple of years. I played at least two, three games in Pittsburgh during my career. And I mean, that stadium alone in the city behind that football team is impeccable. Their fan base and what they stand for is tremendous, man. And I know they're feeling it right now with the passing.
Yeah. One more, and I'll give it back over to Bill.
I got a question for you, Deshaun. I come from an era of safeties that used to seriously hit. You had Ronnie Lott. You had Kenny Easley. You had Dennis Smith over there in Denver. And some guys that could really blast. The game has changed now, and it changed when you played. These guys were taught all throughout, from when they were playing kiddie ball through college and everything else, to hit the guy. You used to hear them talk about snot bowl. But in your career, they kind of penalized you for hitting hard. And I'm wondering, how do you not hit hard?
You know what? The game is obvious right now. Like, if you're a fan of the game and you don't see what's going on, it's ridiculous because, you know, it's all about money. You know what I mean? They want the players to thrive. The quarterbacks, you could barely touch the quarterbacks, the wide receivers, none of them getting punished these days. So it's all about points and money and, you know, touchdowns and all of that stuff, where football is a competitive sport. Me on the other end is I grew up playing defense. That was my mindset. I was always an aggressive kid, and I was violent. So I chose the defensive side of the ball for a reason. And from that aspect, like, I grew up where, you know, like you said, it was all snot bubble. I was taught by a guy named Bobby Jose, who grew up also with those same guys and also played with Kenny Easley. So he, you know, he instilled that mindset in me as a young kid on, you know, tackling, knocking people out. But, like, right now, man, it's hard. You know, it's I see a lot of guys getting hurt from this gray area on how to tackle. Like, they want guys to go low. You know, these guys are hurting themselves, you know, getting concussions, hitting the knees and blowing out cat's knees. And I always say, man, would you rather a headache or would you rather your career getting taken? You blow a cat's knees out, man, it's hard to come back from that.
Right.
Man, I might ring your bell a little bit. You might shake it off, get some hot sauce, some of that smelly sauce. You might be back the next quarter or next game, you know. So it's just a terrible situation right now. We knew we all grew up to have this sport of football, and we grew up watching it and playing it a certain way and playing how it's supposed to be played. But, you know, the league, you know, they trying to say their ass at the same time, which I understand they're getting these lawsuits and all this stuff, but I say, man, put something in place to where you're taking care of these players and you wouldn't
You know,
and I think
Deshaun,
go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, you know, Deshaun, that brings up an interesting question. We might not see it in our lifetime, but I think, you know, if they don't address these issues, and there's a lot of guys, the football players that haven't been well compensated due to these concussions and everything. The NFL kind of looks the other way on it. Hey, we can send people to the moon. Can't we come up with a helmet where we can redesign it so they at least it protects their head? Because, you know, we don't know where this sport's going, but I think soccer mom will have a big impact on whether her son decides to play professional football 20, 30 years from now. Could we be going into a flag football era, something that, you know, we played as kids, but is that where the NFL is going 20, 30 years from now, Deshaun, in your mind, or, you know?
I mean, Mark, I'll be alive if I said I never thought about it like that, because you can just see how the game's transitioned, how it's gotten better, and, you know, and then just the progression it has gone. And then now we're talking about concussions and mental health and all of this stuff. I can see this game, you know, transferring into a flag and just having a 707. Because even in my high school, I'm a high school coach. This flag, this 707 stuff is taking off to a whole nother dimension to where I'm a little lost in the high school world because we didn't have that when I was here. But that's
right.
What the kids, and these kids are getting scholarships based on shorts, playing in shorts and shirts. Right now, which is ridiculous. You know what I mean? And a lot of them are getting themselves hurt because they think, you know, they don't know how to, when they transition themselves from that passing league, Skelly, we call it, you know, flag football, some of y'all will call it at the same time. But when they transition from that and the tackling, a lot of these, you can see these guys getting hurt because they're not used to the physicality of the game because now they're so caught up in, you know, scoring touchdowns and playing two-hand touch football. But they forget about it, the contact part of it when they get serious, you know what I mean? But
I'm of the opinion that there's, like Mark, is that technology it's hard for me to believe that they can make a secure helmet.
Yeah.
But I also know that the athleticism of somebody that's been used to playing football as an athlete with their ability to have to adjust how they play to hit them with a shoulder instead of, you know, I don't call it head hunting. I call it just being aggressive. But most of those penalties, the whoever you hit is moving too. And it's hard for me to understand. Nobody wants to hit somebody helmet to helmet. But how do you stop it when the other guy is a contributory factor because of how he's flinching from the contact? He, you know, he sees it coming and he lowers himself as you're coming in, you know, and is there a way or a fix for that?
I mean, they're going to try everything. Like I said, they're going to try the new helmets, the helmets and all of that stuff. And honestly, I don't know if any helmet can fix that. All right. It's a certain way to tackle. And I feel like at this age, like in the profession, I don't remember nobody teaching me how to tackle when I got professional football. I learned how to tackle when I was a kid, actually, from one of the best tackling progressive guys known to mankind. But he taught me when I was in fifth grade, I used to go see him all off season. But when I got to college, we addressed it a little bit, but not as much technical on how to tackle. A lot of guys think you just wrap up and get guys down. That's not, it's actually a method of tackling. And there's a certain way you got to do it. And if you don't do it right, you can lead to a lot of these injuries. And I don't think any helmet or anything is going to help that. I played football, actually, for 10 years in the National Football League. And I could probably remember one game that I ever wore a mouthpiece. And I haven't suffered that many concussions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've delivered.
Wow.
I kind of feel like mouthpiece or kind of like has something to do with those concussions. You got to think about the trauma, the impact you getting hit, and that trauma you biting down on your mouthpiece. I think that's what's causing a lot of this brain function. Now, I ain't no doctor or nothing, but I just know from my stats, I played and I hit people, you know, for a living. And I didn't even wear a mouthpiece.
Yeah.
No.
I know this much. I had a good friend back in the days of being in Oakland named Jack Tatum. And I also had one named Eric Wright. And Ronnie Lott's a good friend of mine. And you know what? They would talk to hit hard. And I don't know. And now if you land on a quarterback penalty, it's a quandary. I'm not sure what the answer is. Yeah.
All right. Because a lot of this stuff is going to come down to people's pockets. Because you get fined for those hits. When you see those flags go up and they get you with those hits, you get fined. And
right.
I was on the other side of that where I lost $500,000 just due to fines on tackling. And then there's no kind of record of where that money goes. You can't keep that money back. You can't deliver it to a charity of your own. Like, it's just gone. Like, where's the
you
money?
Have no accounting of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. It's really ridiculous. Because, and like I said, like you said, you – even these quarterbacks, I was watching the 49er game the other day. I was in the 49er game, and, you know, Osa went in and made a great move on the tackle, got to the quarterback, and just tackled him and took him to the ground. Like, didn't even do anything that I felt was out of the ordinary. They threw a flag on this guy. Now, he's going to have to pay for that financially. At the same time, that could have been a tight game situation where it could have been a – you know, a couple yards from a field goal, they could have, you know, keep those out of field goal range. But that 50-yard could have got them there. It could have been a Super Bowl. Like, those little things is causing the game to be – it's watering down the game.
You know what I mean?
It's not making it fun to watch. I mean, I don't want to watch football as much as I used to just because it's boring. There's flags all through the – and they're ridiculous. Nobody getting hit. There's no much – too much excitement going on like it used to be.
Yeah.
You know,
along
let's talk about that Super Bowl in 2012 because I really like the guy that was coaching you in Jim Harbaugh, the Battle of the Harbaughs. To me, Jim, I think, really, you know, orchestrated Stanford. Then he came into San Francisco. Man, that must have been – tell us about him. I had a chance to interview him a few years back, and, you know, to me, it's a guy I love playing for. I mean, I'd run, you know, he kind of reminds me of that old-school mentality coach. Have fun, and but just bust your ass on the field. Deshaun, how was it to play for him? I know you guys came up short, you know, in the Super Bowl, but you had 9 combined tackles and everything, but just playing for the Jim Harbaugh.
Oh, Mark, you hit it on the head, man. To be honest, it was an honor playing for him, you know. But Harbaugh was a great guy, you know. Like you said, he was easy to get along with as a coach, man. He played the game also, so he can actually, you know, relate to a lot of the players in a lot of situations that we are in. I feel like he did a great job of preparing us game in, week out, and he also brought the team together. Like, we had some good football teams while I was there. You know, we had, you know, a great draft class and all that, but it was just some things that didn't, you know, we needed to get disciplined about, and I felt like he just came in at the right time on top of that. And not taking anything, you know, credit away from him, but, you know, we had some guys that did some things. Coach, you know, Nolan put a good squad together. You know, then Coach Singletary took over and implement that discipline that we didn't have and that we needed
right.
as a football team. You know, he did a great job of that. And, I always respect Coach Singletary for that. You know, he did a great job with that. And Harbaugh just came in and made it fun. He put it all together and made it, you know, more fun and not about business. It's football,
yeah.
You know, it gets to that point. You know, it gets to that point to where it's just you lose interest in it because it's all business and you
yeah.
But Harbaugh came in there and made us feel like kids again. We used to hang out off season, you know, do fun team activities together, get to learn your teammates, things like that, and everything just came together, man. We just became a family, and I think he.
So you're pretty much like me. I think he's gonna roll TCU, and then he's gonna take Georgia out, and somewhere along the line we can celebrate.
Yeah, I hope he does, man. I hope he does.
I want to know this much. This is a personal question. Tell me about your gangster butt when you was in high school with the Raffles.
Oh, man. Is it high school?
Yeah. I saw that talking about you need to make some money. And so you started having you and your partner started having raffles.
Yeah, man. We that was just us being kids, and I went to school with this, my best friend to the day, Donnell Wheaton. We was always, you know, trying to find our next hustle. You know, we like nice things. We always wanted nice shoes, and we always, you know, wanted to find out what we're gonna do during the weekend. Let's go to the mall, movies. So we had to provide for ourselves, man. And he just had a hustle man mentality, you know, at a young age, and we just always try to figure out ways to make money. And back in school, we started out middle school. We started selling candy. We'll go to one of those Costco's, Sam's Club back in the day, and just buy the big bulk of candy and sell them, you know, cheaper than the school was selling them. So we was getting them off pretty quick, but we got, you know, we started getting smarter, and, you know, the more money we got, the bigger risk we started taking. We started doing this raffle. Started selling raffle tickets at school, and that's when we started seeing a lot of money. So we were selling raffles for like $5 or whatever it was, $1 a ticket. I don't can't remember the exact price, but and we had so many tickets, and I mean the pot would be like thousands of dollars, like a couple thousand dollars, like, you know. And then we would, you know, split our earnings. The winner get half, and the other half, me and my boy split, and we was doing knocking that out every day, learning nutrition time, we know we out there selling tickets. By lunchtime is the raffle, so you got to come meet us at a certain building, and we discover who the winner is.
Hey,
but man,
sounds entrepreneurial to me. And as a matter of fact, I wanted to get this commercial in there about your new cigar shop that I didn't know anything about.
Yeah, well, I was planning on taking you when you got out here, but Yeah, me and my partner just closed. We opened up a new spot down in Corona, Riverside County. It's called Little Havana. It's really nice. It's probably one of the best cigar lounges you will see in the state of California, especially in the L.A. area. I think it's top tier. I mean, it was a work in progress, you know, getting it open. We finally got it done. Very nice, man. It's everything is theme wise. Like, it's probably like four or five different rooms within the cigar lounge. All of them decorated different. And all of them got their own theme and feeling. And when you're in there, and we wanted to do that just so it's not just like a full. You know, when you go to most cigar lounges, they're like, you know, dark and
sports bars. Yeah,
they like sportsy or they just really dark. But we wanted to get a feeling of, you know, whenever you go to, depending on your mood and how you feel coming in there, you know, it's different rooms you can go in that's going to make you just going to put you in your comfort zone as far as your mood, whatever mood you're in. So we got a blue room that's really nice, decorated nice. You go in there, it looks like it's very antique-y. Got a game floor. We got pool tables, foosball. Got another little cozy section that's dark. It's dark, but at the same time, it's nice, man. I think when you come out here, you're going to get a better visual of it. But it's top tier, man. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I know.
You got the Al Pacino pictures up, too?
Oh, yeah, we got all of those for sure. We got the pictures all through there.
Yeah.
Hey, let me ask you something, Deshaun. You know, my favorite NFC team growing up, and boy, they've really had a tough go of it the last few years. And you played for them in 2015 was the Washington Redskins. I can go back to when they had the Hogs and Theismann and Riggins, and it just goes on, and now the whole sexual misconduct that's surplus from this team left and right, and you know, the name change and everything. How far do you think they can go? They might be a year out, but, boy, I'll tell you, it's surprising to know that they started 1-4 and they're holding their own down in this thing. But it's pretty interesting because what a proud franchise. To see it fall like this, it's kind of tough to watch, but I know you, there's peaks and valleys in life. You just got to ride it out, but where do you see this franchise going in the next few years?
Yeah, man, I had the honor of playing with this team also, man. I love the city. Great organization. And, and I was able to meet some greats there. But that's to say, like you said, man, they are playing tremendous football right now. They're playing really good football. I think, like you said, they're not too far out. Maybe a couple of pieces they'll add coming up in this draft that'll get them over the hump. You know,
yeah.
Because they're going to have to face Philly every time, at least twice every year. That's a good-looking squad itself. But I think, man, they definitely on the right path to turning that organization around and back where it needs to be. Or, you know, it's unfortunate the stuff they got to go through with Dan Snyder and what he has to do, what they're dealing with over there in Washington. But, you know, I don't know too much on that, so I don't want to, you know, just harp on something that I'm not too
right.
aware of. I don't get all into the politics and what they got going on. But it's just tough to see an organization like that dealing with what they've been going through and not just focusing on football.
Hey, 6 minutes left in the show. One more, and I'll give it over to Bill. Who did you pattern your game off of? Who was your idol? Because, I mean, there were some great safeties in this league for so many years, and just you to play this game for more than a cup of coffee has got to be something. So there had to be something that stood out that you just played this game with the utmost respect, and when you took it to the field, man, I'm saying maybe like a Lester Hayes, Jack Lambert type? I mean, who was the guy that, Ronnie Lott?
Yeah, it was Ronnie Lott, man. Ronnie Lott, Brian Dawkins, those guys, man. And, you know, of course, Troy Polamalu, guys like that.
Man.
Brian Dawkins, Sean Taylor. And some of those guys were some of the guys that I like to idolize my game after. But like I said, at a young age, I was just very a hyper kid and very aggressive. So, like, a lot of that stuff stemmed from just my... like my physical presence and my upbringing. You know, I always had this. I ended up starting football when I moved over to the city called Harvard City, and across the street was where the Pop Warner football team used to practice at. So I used to go there after school to hang out, and before the practices, they should play this game called throw up tackle. So whoever has the ball, every man for themselves, whoever has the ball gets tackled. that was the right game for me. I used to be over there, like, running kids over and knocking them out. And I had a coach come approach me like, man, who you play for? Like, did you play? And I'm like, well, nah. That's how I got into the whole football thing. But I just started watching. Like, I got fond of the Cowboys at a young age, man. Deion Sanders was a guy that I really liked.
Yeah.
You know, I just liked his whole style and his demeanor and what he brought to the game, his confidence. You know, he although he played corner and I played safety, I did, you know, kind of mimic him a little bit because I thought I was a corner. I had my coaches always tell me, man, you should play corner. You're going to play corner in the league. That's when I was in high school and college. And my coach actually twitched me from safety to corner when I was in it, when I went to the University of Washington. So I ended up still getting drafted as a safety, which was fine with me because I liked the position anyway. But, you know, I kind of idolized my game of a lot of those guys, man. I can't forget Ed Reed also, man. He's one of the guys.
Ravens.
Sideline to sideline. Playmaker, big time.
Well, I would ask Bill this. Real fast, 3 minutes. Bill, I always ask you this. I'm going to ask Deshaun. The worst stadiums fans and the best stadiums fans besides the teams you played for. Who had the worst fans when you traveled into that thing where, oh, God, this is going to be a long day?
Oh, for sure, man. I'm Seattle, man. That 12 man was some serious. I was so serious. And I also hated playing in it, but I loved it. I loved the competition and being in there. You know, it always brought the best out of me, and I'm sure a lot of guys that go through that stadium. And, of course, you know, Oakland Stadium. The Raiders were right back in Oakland. That was also a tough, you know, environment. I remember when I played in San Fran, they kind of banned us from playing in the preseason.
Yeah, I remember that.
I know that. I'm an old Raider fan. Yeah, I go back to Gene Upshaw and Kenny Stabler.
Oh, my God.
And
Howie Long.
Boy,
yeah.
Cliff Branch was one of my favorite people. Yeah, he was a good man. Yeah, we used to all hang out together.
Unbelievable.
We all won world championships. Yeah.
Well, as we wind this thing down, Bill, I know next week we got an archive, and we resume with the live on January 4th. Basically, let everybody know, you know, we want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, good things in 2023. But how can people get a hold of you, my friend?
They can reach me on my Gmail account. It's Bill Norte, BILLNORTE, 15@gmail.com. Deshaun, I need somebody to pick me up at the airport tomorrow. I'm looking forward to seeing you. But what a wonderful interview, and we thank you for being on with us. And you got to come back again sometime. We appreciate you. Thank you so much.
What a great interview. Yeah, man, I'll tell you, can't get enough of the. You know, 30 minutes goes by quick, and we could talk an hour with you and really break it down. But what a career and. I always say, you know, when you talk to these athletes, you know, just to make it for more than a cup of coffee and to last in a league that long is pretty damn impressive. And, boy, I'll tell you, it's a tribute. I don't know if you ever sit back there with one of those cigars in your shop and light that thing and reflect on what you've accomplished and maybe even created role models out there in some of the cities you've played, but
definitely.
It's such a blessing to talk to you and definitely we're going to do it again. So sure. As we wrap this up for Bill North out there in Seattle, Deshaun Goldson that's picking him up at an airport, here's truly Mark Mancini saying have a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, stay safe. Talk to you 2 weeks from tonight on another live version of the True North Podcast. Good night, everybody.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.